Greetings, urban farmers, gardeners, and healthy food visionaries. Farmer Greg here, and welcome to the 833rd episode of the Urban Farm Podcast, where every day we work together to educate and inspire you to become part of your food revolution. Today in our podcast, we have someone who teaches about fat content in our pet foods. We're talking with Jaron Lucas about nutrition for dogs. Jaron Lucas is the CEO and founder of Yum Wolf, the air-dried dog food brand. He is also the author of The Canine Coco Mega Effect that explores 162 studies on which fats are linked to a longer lifespan in dogs. Previously, Jaron founded the VC-backed fintech startup CoinCenter, which he sold in 2016. He also started his career in investment banking at JP Morgan and graduated from Rice University on the President's Honor Roll. Besides dog nutrition, he's passionate about history, biochemistry, and daily meditation. Welcome to the show today, Jaron. Are you ready to rock dog food?
Heck yeah, I am. Thanks for having me, Greg.
Absolutely. So I shared a bit about you. Can you fill in the blanks for us and share more about the path you took to get where you're at today?
Yeah, I think my life changed a lot when I spent a year in meditation in 2018. And I really came out on the other side of that, saying that what I had been doing in tech wasn't necessarily fulfilling me anymore. And I wanted to do something that was going to have more of a tangible, positive impact on people's daily lives. And as I learned that all of my skin allergies are actually food allergies, that led me on to, of course, like doctors are shooting me up with corticosteroids that at increasing levels, and I just need to not eat eggs, nuts, and seeds. So that all led me, plus adopting my dog Sherlock and doing this deep dive on 3,000 clinical research studies that I ended up, as you mentioned, covering in my book, really tying like ingredients to longevity in dogs according to the latest microbiome research. And all of these kind of coincided, and it eventually formed Yum Wolf. It's something I'm very passionate about. It's, I think we, as an example, deal with a lot of dogs who have allergies, a lot of skin issues. And that's something like I really feel personally, like when I'm talking to pet parents who are having these issues, it's not for me just something theoretical. Like I can actually feel their dog's pain. And that's really what has driven me in doing this. Not to mention, I'm a bit of a perfectionist, so I just want to make the best recipes I can for my own dog.
Yeah. I had something very interesting happen for me. I used to do rescue work for Rescue a Golden in Phoenix, Arizona, when I lived there, and golden retrievers. And I used to tell them I want older female dogs. They brought me this four-year-old golden, beautiful dog, smelled so bad, was bleeding on its front arms and its chin from where it scratched, and on $100 a month of medicines, allergy medicines to manage this. And I immediately took her off of the kibble diet that they had her on, and I put her on a raw food diet, and within 6 weeks, she was all better. It happened that fast. And that was like, wow.
Yeah, those are always our fastest rags to riches story, or our fastest recovery stories at Yum Wolf are really the dogs who are coming off of dry kibble. And I think my book really explains why that is. It's not, our food is air dried. And there are a few different ways of cooking dog food, including freeze drying, fresh food, dehydrated. But the one that most people still feed is dry kibble, and that's made through a hot extrusion process, which cooks the food at high heat and high pressure through this grinding machine. And a lot of people know that degrades the nutrients on the deepest levels. Mm-hmm. But what most people don't realize is that the cooking temperature and the pressure also oxidize all the fats, turning them into free radicals. And so that's why I always tell people that there is no such thing as a non-inflammatory dry kibble, because all of the fats are oxidized free radicals. So it's simple. It almost doesn't matter what kind of food you move your dog to. They're very likely to see an improvement as long as it's anything but dry kibble. And then from there, you can optimize based on if they do have other kind of like health needs. Dogs with pancreatitis, for instance, need a low fat diet, or maybe you're like always on the go and you don't necessarily have the ability to feed fresh food every day. So something like air dried would be a very good replacement for that in those cases. Yeah, literally feeding. I feel like my mission in life at this point is just convincing people to stop feeding their dog dry kibble.
And so I've gone down this rabbit hole recently also about all the chemicals and everything in processed food and highly processed food. And I can only imagine that dry kibble falls under that same umbrella of highly processed food and additives and other chemicals that have got to be just really bad for our animals.
Yeah, absolutely is. It does start back to the cooking process, because that hot extruder machine is actually the exact same machine that's used to make cereals like Cheerios. So we'll start there. But getting into some of the ingredients, while there's been some improvement over the years with the largest dry kibble manufacturers, we can start at the worst, which would be like a lot of really sketchy synthetic vitamins and minerals. Sometimes there are concerns that they come from China. Definitely a lot of untested stuff that may be in there. It does come to things as simple as the top three ingredients in a lot of these brands. One of the most recommended brands by vets, which the only reason it's still that way is for two reasons. One, the money is one of them. They have the highest margins because they charge an overpriced amount for one of the worst products available. So that means that they have a ton of margin to pay vets. The second is that they were first. So like they started in, I think the 60s is like when they started knocking on doors of veterinarians around the country, and having that kind of first mover advantage really helps. It helps the manufacturer, not necessarily the dogs eating their food. So when you look at the brand I'm talking about, like their first three ingredients are going to be gluten meal, corn, and then rice. And this is like a veterinary grade dog food for digestive issues, allergies. So what's missing from those first three ingredients? Meat. Like the most obvious ingredient that should be the number one thing, or maybe the first three ingredients in that diet.
And dogs are carnivores.
Exactly. And that's why with our newest dog food, we actually really went back to the ancestral diet, and we wanted to take things away from that and apply it to this new food. Because our first food, which was called Perfect Kibble, which despite the name is an air-dried dog food, that one was really guided by these microbiome studies. There were a few things that we wanted to achieve there. First, our only two recipes were chicken and beef, which are the two highest allergens in dogs. And one of the most likely reason for that is that we feed our dog the same thing day after day, and eventually they just build up an intolerance to those proteins. I've become a huge proponent of rotational feeding, like feed your dog one kind of protein for 4 to 8 weeks and then switch to a different one, turkey, and then go to beef, and then go to fish, and then cycle through that. That's a really good way to help avoid food allergies in our dogs, because if you think about it, like us humans, we eat a very different meal every meal of the day. It's like likely, unless you're not counting any leftovers, every meal for those 7 days straight might be something different. So with our dogs, it isn't that way. Like they're really getting just, we're like pounding them with the same ingredients. And that is why 15% are allergic to the two most fed proteins. We really wanted to come out with some hypoallergenic proteins, but as I had mentioned, synthetic vitamins and minerals, like there are lots of studies coming out right now showing how just even sourcing aside, even like US source synthetics, and you got to imagine these are literally chiseled out of a rock. So we put those into whether it's like dog food or a multivitamin, and we feed that. What all these studies are showing is that a vitamin D from synthetic sources, our body doesn't really see it in the same way as one from a bioavailable source like cod liver oil. Another one's B vitamins. B vitamins are like extremely important, but when they're from synthetic sources, they can actually have negative effects on heart health and stuff like that. A lot of this is very new research. I think that it's about to be a tsunami of this. But if you start to look at what are the, for instance, for liver issues, humans and dogs are recommended choline supplements. Instead of finding the synthetic form, we can ask ourselves, where is the largest, most bioavailable source to choline? It's liver. If you look at like heart health, CoQ10 supplements are often recommended. What's the highest, most bioavailable form of CoQ10? It's chicken heart, duck heart, to a third lower extent, beef heart, it's heart. So that's why the nose to tail diet just makes so much sense, because you literally don't need the synthetics if you do that.
Interesting. I've always wondered. So I feed Kismet, my dog, a raw food diet, and it's ground up chicken, all the chicken parts and all the beef parts. And I've always wondered why. So it has to do with delivering nutrients out of the meat rather than having to add it as a vitamin, essentially.
Exactly. And that's why when you look at a lot of raw diet recipes, they have so few ingredients and they have so few added supplements to it, because yeah, like you said, you're feeding Kismet all of those vitamins and minerals in their best form. Now, the only place where I part ways and disagree with the raw diet community is I do strongly believe that the ingredient profile is correct. But all of the microbiome studies show that the raw diet isn't the one that produces the most microbiome diversity. And people will argue with me on this. They'll say things like dogs have a lower pH balance in their stomachs. And that while that's true, one, humans also used to eat a raw diet for millions of years. It wasn't the one that was associated with longevity. And two, just because your dog can eat it still doesn't mean that it's producing the most advantageous microbiome. And so there are two statistics that are primarily looked at in these studies. The first is called microbiome diversity. So that one's just looking at what's the diversity of colonies of different types of bacteria in the microbiome. And if we have more of it, that's good. But it's not the only one, because half of that could be pathogens. And so there's this second statistic called the F to B ratio. And that one looks at basically the good bacteria versus the bad bacteria. And you, of course, want to increase that ratio too. And so that's why I believe that taking the raw diet and air drying it not only makes all the nutrients more bioavailable, so your dog's just getting more nutrition out of the food, but you're also you're taking all that space in the raw diet that would normally be sucked up by pathogens, and you're leaving it open to be refilled by good bacteria. So you're taking all the benefits of the raw diet, but then just slightly tweaking it to really align it with the microbiome research and what that's showing.
So are you suggesting that I cook the food?
You could cook it, but I would do so at very low temperatures. So that can become a complicated thing. 170 degrees is just for 30 minutes is like required to kill every class of bacteria. But if you're feeding raw already, maybe you might not want to do that. You might want to keep it at 130 or 40. It really depends, because every 10 degrees, you have a new class of pathogens that gets destroyed up to 170 degrees. But within that swing, you're also going to start degrading some of the B vitamins. It becomes a delicate balance there, which is possible to figure out, but it's just, that's the balance that you would need to make. Now, if we're being like real and we're not trying to be like an absolute perfectionist about this, because a lot of people are, but at the same time, like, your dog is probably going to live a long time if you like degrade 10% of the B vitamins in their food and they're getting like 30% more than they could ever need. So that's probably the case that you're going to find yourself in cooking it at 170 degrees. And yeah, like I definitely, when I do 70% of my dog's diet as homemade food, and I do cook it at low temperatures.
Interesting. So you keep talking about the microbiome. For our listeners that may not know what that is, why don't you give us 30 seconds on what is a microbiome?
The microbiome is pretty much running our day-to-day, it seems. So it's the all the bacteria in really beginning in our mouth and going through all of our pipes all the way until it ends. But the part of the microbiome that and the bacteria in it that people focus on most is in the small intestine. That's also where a lot of absorption of food goes. Basically, what we have been finding out is that the microbiome controls everything from our happiness and how we're feeling. It controls some of the digestion, that it's like pre-digestion that happens before we absorb nutrients. So if those don't get properly processed before they're absorbed in our body, they might cause allergies. They might get like an inflammatory response. So that's why, like, when we look at all pretty much every health issue tends to have some link to the microbiome. And a lot of times when you look at food allergies, for instance, within the small intestine, there's usually like an entire colony missing, like one that might be 10% of the microbiome normally. It's just like completely not there. And now this child has also happens to have an egg allergy. It's like a lot of correlations like that.
Yeah. How on earth? So you had these allergies. How on earth did you go from thinking about it on a human level and going to an animal dog level?
Well, it all happened at the same time. I'm such a dog lover, and I was looking at everything I was learning, and I was really looking at like the aisles in my local pet store, just saying like, this dry kibble, why is there so much of it? It's so terrible. There are a few other good dog food brands out there, but there were little things that I wasn't seeing in it. Like, for instance, no seed oils. That's a big part of our brand and why people come to us. And instead, we use Coco Mega Super Fats. We'll talk about that in a second, but fats are like a key part of, they're like the key switch between turning on and off inflammation. Also, peas, rice, legumes, potatoes. A lot of these really common and filler ingredients that you find in other brands. I was just saying to myself, why is this common? Like, why can't I find a dog food without them? That's really been like a guiding light. Plus the microbiome studies, there were just a lot. I felt like I could create the right ingredient mix after being one of the early people to learn a lot of this.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about that. I've got your book here. Thank you for sending me a copy. You gifted it to me. I appreciate that. The Canine Coco Mega Effect. So you went through all these studies and you wrote about it. What did you find, and what does fat have to do with it?
The most interesting discovery I made in researching this book was that combining coconut oil with omega-3s have these synergistic effects on each other in a 1+1=3 kind of way. And they
Coco Omega. Coconut.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh,
we got the
nice.
Coconut oil,
all right.
And the omegas. And not the omegas, we got the omega-3s. We'll talk about the other omega in a second. But so I discovered that this is like only in the last, I wrote the book last year, and it had only been about the 5 years preceding that where several studies had been done showing the same thing, which was that there's something that's happening when you either with yourself, like humans, or we feed it to our dogs. We feed this combination of just a small amount of coconut oil and omega-3s, about twice as much omega-3s as the coconut oil. They were having these probiotic-like effects. And so it's not a probiotic, but it was having that positive effect on microbiome diversity. They were reducing inflammation more than either on its own. And they were also aligned with all sorts of really cool things like anti-obesity, anti-diabetes, positive heart health, better liver health, anti-allergy, like all the things, anti-IBD as well. It just had these really great effects. And
interesting.
Yeah.
Just by adding some coconut oil.
Yeah. And if you feed them at the same time, there's some researchers speculated on what may be happening on the biochemical level. That part is still being explored, but you can't really argue with the facts that have been found to date. But I think taking a step back in the book, I really do start with just which fats were shown to have a positive correlation with longevity and which were shown to have a negative one. And the answers won't really surprise most listeners. Seed oils were the number one offender. They were shown to not be associated with longevity, whereas animal fats, omega-3s, coconut oil, they were all shown to have a positive correlation. Now, fats, and I have a whole chart in my book showing like all the different biochemical pathways that essentially are triggered whether we feed more omega-3s or omega-6s. Seed oils are very high in omega-6, and they also oxidize easily, causing them to become free radicals. That's why they're like pro-inflammatory. And there are also, in my book, I explain all the actual biochemical pathways. So it's not just a theoretical thing that in woo science fiction that it sounds good. It's like a real thing that's happening in any biological animal's body, including humans. All the stuff in my book, I debate, maybe I'll write a human book someday, but anyone could read my book and apply it to themselves. All of these benefits were found on humans, dogs, and cats. Very interesting stuff about how basically fats, which are, in my opinion, the underlooked macronutrient, if you will. Like, people tend to focus on the proteins. People tend to focus on carbs. On the protein side, like, proteins are the main cause of allergies a lot of times. People often don't really talk about fats that much. And the truth is that fats are really the main trigger into whether the body is going to be in a pro-inflammatory state or an anti-inflammatory one.
And we've been programmed that fats aren't good.
Exactly. Low-fat diet. And there's only really one kind of dog that should have a low-fat diet, and it's one who's prone to pancreatitis, which is a growing health issue in dogs, but most dogs don't have that situation. Like, schnauzers do, sometimes Maltipoos. It's some of the smaller breeds, in particular schnauzers. Most dogs would actually benefit from having a one-to-one protein-to-fat ratio. And I go further in my book about what percent of fats should be omega-3s versus omega-6s. But you really want to get that also to a one-to-one ratio. So to put that one in perspective, because this is really important. So the omega-3-to-6 ratio of like your average healthy dog food is 1-to-6, meaning it's 6 times more inflammatory molecules than anti-inflammatory ones.
Wow.
Humans are typically recommended a 1-to-1 ratio, if not 2-to-1. You want more omega-3s than omega-6s.
Yeah.
So we're already starting off bad in the pet food space. At Yum Wolf, we try to keep it 1-to-1. We have exceeded it with our newest dog food. So your average dry kibble is actually going to be 1-to-16 ratio, which is the same as American fast food like McDonald's. And AFCO requirements, the industry regulators requirements, are 1-to-30, which, God forbid, any dog eat that diet.
Right.
So yeah, the first step is really getting the omega-3-to-6 ratio, not feeding anything cooked through a hot extruder, which has oxidized the fats. You literally cannot get rid of your dog's health issues if you're feeding them oxidized fats. These are the first two steps.
If you're feeding them ultra processed food.
Exactly.
Same for humans, by the way. I've been going down, I said this earlier, I've been going down a rabbit hole about ultra processed foods, which y'all are going to hear about in the coming months in my podcast. So that's the second step. What was the first step?
First step is probably to stop feeding ultra processed foods. The second is to get the omega-3-to-6 balance right. And then from there, it's we can boost it with this Coke Omega, which is really adding coconut oil to it. And the important thing there is, if anyone's been on keto, a lot of people on keto actually try to shy away from coconut, any type of MCT oil with lauric acid in it, because it doesn't convert into ketones. But with the Coke Omega effect, you actually do want it in there, because that's the part that's actually primarily promoting the probiotic effect. Whereas the MCTs have a separate benefit that's very important, very big. But I wanted to mention that detail for any science nerds out there.
All right, let's talk about Yum Wolf and your book. So people can find your book on Amazon?
Yeah, my book's available on Amazon. And yeah, I hope you love it. Email me if you have any questions.
Looks like it's a pretty straightforward read.
Yeah, I try to keep it simple enough. I do like really, I think anyone who reads my book will have seen the studies in a way that is both interesting and engaging and will prove that I am not just spewing a bunch of random guesswork. I go deep into 162 studies in this book. And this is after reading 3,000 clinical studies on top of that. A lot of research went into this, and it's really important stuff, especially for anyone whose dog is having allergies, digestive issues, obesity, which also a lot of people don't realize obesity and diabetes are inflammatory issues, but they are. Yeah. So it all comes back to that.
And I just want to step back. We've been feeding Kismet a raw diet, raw veggies and raw meat, since she came to us at 8 weeks old. And the vet tells us how healthy she is. So starting that way, we're going to avoid all those other issues.
Yeah. And the fact that you started so early is important too, because the microbiome in a dog is really set in the first 18 months of their life. And humans are similar, except that number is more like 3 years.
Yeah.
It's very important. For instance, probiotics. Probiotics have a lifelong effectiveness for dogs if you feed them in the first 18 months. But if you don't, let's say you start at age 3, then they'll still have a positive benefit, but you have to feed it at least every 3 days or it completely loses the benefits. Yeah, starting early when the microbiome is still being formed is really important. Sounds like you did it.
Woohoo! All right. And tell me about Yum Wolf.
Yum Wolf is run by my wife and co-founder and I, wife slash co-founder, I should say. We're an air-dried dog food brand that kind of sticks to a lot of principles. The no seed oils, like I mentioned, we have a long never list with our brand, and we really care. If you look at us, whereas I would say like a lot of brands over time try to, when they change their recipes, they try to cost cut. Like for us, every V2 of our recipe is better than the previous one. And Perfect Superfoods, our latest dog food that launched this week, It has been 2 years in the making. It was really hard, but worth it. People are loving it. We got this message today where someone, this is like what really makes it worthwhile for me a lot of times, is when I hear from a customer who says, I've been waiting for this product for a year and I can't believe my dog loves it this much. It's been worth the wait. My wife texted me that one earlier today and I was like, yes, this is awesome. And a lot of it makes sense to me. Like, with this newest recipe, we actually don't have any synthetic vitamins and minerals, which makes it harder to formulate. But I actually believe that a lot of the picky eaters out there actually hate the taste of synthetic vitamin and mineral blends. I've smelled and tasted them myself. They taste and smell awful. You wonder why, like, your picky eater goes up to food, sniffs at it, walks away. Most dog food has that in it. So just getting rid of that, and then dogs go for the organ meats first when they eat their prey in the wild. So you're going now, instead, we've replaced it with the tastiest part for dogs, all those organs. So yeah, Perfect Superfood. It's like definitely my favorite dog food. We wanted to make it all hypoallergenic meats. So we have a wild caught fish recipe, a low fat turkey recipe, which is also good for pancreatitis. And then we have this meat lovers recipe. And I was speaking to pet parents and I was like, can your dog eat at least one of these recipes? And originally the answer was no. So we went back to reformulating each recipe until the answer was consistently yes. And now when I talk to people, like, people are saying yes. So it's been pretty awesome because I really wanted to serve dogs who either have allergies or just help them get onto a rotational diet with hypoallergenic protein so that they can prevent them in the first place.
Nice. So I'm on your website checking it out, and I'm wondering if this is a full-time dog food for dogs or a supplement or both.
This is a full-time complete and balanced dog food. And now we have so many recipes. One of the ways that I've been thinking about this is, let's give people options. One of the biggest debates in the pet food space is grain-free or grain-inclusive. Mm-hmm. Now we have both. Some people are very, and the DCM topic is another debate for another time. That would be another hour-long episode. But
DCM?
Dilated cardiomyopathy is like a really controversial topic in pet food right now. And it basically dictates whether someone is going to prefer a grain-free or a grain-inclusive diet. I have many opinions on it, but fundamentally, we wanted to just give people options. What, no matter what you believe, you're getting the best food here. And if you want to rotate between those, you can also do that to cover your bases and minimize overall risk.
As a pet parent, I get it. Thank you. I so appreciate your work and I'm loving your book. Thanks.
Yeah, I appreciate you reading it. I appreciate you having me on, and this topic that you're getting onto about a lot of the sketchy things in our food supply is a really important one right now because it's hitting a point where people really are starting to notice it.
Oh, yeah. In our health, big time. Yes,
Yeah.
absolutely. So I'm going to shift on you, and I'd like for you to talk about a time you failed, how you overcame that failure, and what you might have learned from it.
Well, as an entrepreneur, I feel like you're always having many failures all the time. And I really picked up meditation. That's been a big part of it for me. But I would say the reason why I picked up meditation in the first place is because in 2018, I made and lost a massive amount of money in the course of 12 months.
I've done that before.
Okay, so you understand how great that is. And then how much of a hit to your ego it is. And that's actually why I mentioned earlier, I didn't really give the pre-story there, but that's actually why I felt like such a massive failure after that. It was such a hit to my ego. Here I am, like I'm the successful friend with everyone around me. And then I go into like, nope, not so much. And when you really identify yourself as that, a lot of people make the mistake, a very human mistake, of tying yourself and your who you are to like what you do professionally, how successful you are. When I hit a low on that one, I basically spent the next year in meditation and I learned a lot of different types. It really has been like, I think I'm in my sixth year now of meditating every day. And thank you. And I think that it's become a very essential part of my life. I'm definitely still a very imperfect human being, but I'm a lot better than I was 6 years ago and a lot happier, I would say.
Welcome to being human.
What? Yeah. Thank you. And I've been on this planet for 38 years and I'm being welcomed every day.
And what do you consider your biggest success?
My biggest success, I would say, is maybe my friendships. I've done a good job of maintaining a lot of core friendships that I've had since high school, since my early 20s, even today. I would say that's probably the most fulfilling one. Professionally, I would say that what's happening with Yum Wolf is probably that. That for me is like the one that is connecting really well in terms of people like our products. And so it's you can feel that feedback, and so I would say that probably my biggest success is still yet to come, but it's nice to be doing something where you feel like you are like making a positive difference in people's lives.
Exactly. That's why I do this podcast. And I can get how that would be for you. Helping pet parents is, yeah, I get it. And
Pets aren't just pets either, like you this for sure, but they are like the most kindest, important thing in our lives a lot of days. And that's why I feel like we may make pet food, but we are ultimately helping educate consumers and pet parents, people on health in general, and we're helping their dogs live longer so that they can be happier as a human.
pets and humans can be happier.
Yeah,
Yeah,
both.
exactly. Exactly. What drives you?
It always changes. I always want to make some sort of positive impact, but I think it's a combination of people and going on an adventure of I like creating a product and I really love the product development side of starting a company. And to me, when you can actually develop a product that people find valuable, I've made the opposite type of product too, where nobody wants it. That can be a bit of an entrepreneurial game, if you will. But I think that process of building something and like even these hats, these are like Letterman jacket patches that are on these hats. And it's just like the process of having something that I made on my own, it really fulfills me.
Nice. His hat says Yum Wolf on it.
Yeah.
And if you could recommend one book for our listeners, what would it be and why?
Right now, I would first, if anyone hasn't read Dune, I would have to start there. Everyone should go read the first Dune book. And then I'm also reading the Red Rising series right now, which is really good. That one's Hunger Games meets Dune.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I'm a big sci-fi nerd.
Yeah, you and me too, man. One of my longtime favorites is Ender's Game.
Oh, night.
That was from decades ago, but yeah, I love that series. Excellent. And what one final piece of advice do you have for our listeners?
Don't feed your dog dry kibble. But yeah,
Right.
Like it would be that. Don't feed your dog dry kibble.
Yeah, very good. Thank you so much for joining us on the show today, Jaron. We appreciate you being here.
Yeah, thank you so much, Greg.
So how can our listeners find you, get some dog food from you, find your book? Tell us all that.
Anyone interested, please follow me on Instagram. I'm Jaron Lucas, with Lucas with a K. And my company's Yum Wolf. Despite the common misconception, some people mispronounce it Yum Wolf. It's actually Yum Wolf, like a dog barking. So
woof, woof.
Yum, yeah, exactly that. Yumwolf.com is where you can find out more.
Awesome. Thank you. And you can find show notes from today's podcast at urbanfarm.org/Yum Wolf.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode of the Urban Farm Podcast. Remember to listen for tips, advice, and resources to help you on your journey with urban farming. You can find us on the web at urbanfarm.org or send us an email to podcast@urbanfarm.org. In the words of Vincent Van Gogh, great things are done by a series of small things brought together. Be encouraged that with each lesson learned and skill developed, you are one step closer in the direction of your dreams.